This is Storage Unpacked. Subscribe at storageunpacked.com.
This is Chris Evans with a Storage Unpacked podcast. I'm here with Martin. How are you doing, Martin?
Not too bad, Chris. We've got summer again, so that's good.
We have, and significant technical problems trying to get recording today. USB hub problems?
Yeah, I think everybody's had problems.
Yeah, mine is the camera and the fact that I'm sweating a bit because obviously, as you said, the summer's come back and I can't really have fans on because it'll be too noisy. So I'm starting to warm up, getting a bit tacky there. Oh, anyway, enough of that. We have a very interesting discussion today, and it's something I think we're going to find is going to be really important over the next decade in terms of media. So let's dive into it. We're going to talk to Phil Bullinger from Western Digital about zoned media and about SMR. So, Phil, how are you doing?
Good, Chris. Thanks for having me on the podcast today. I appreciate it. Hi, Martin.
Hi, Phil.
It's good to be able to talk to you. And probably the best place to start is if you could introduce yourself, and then we'll kick off with the discussion.
Yeah, sure. I'd be happy to, Chris. So as Chris mentioned, this is Phil Bullinger. I'm the Senior Vice President and General Manager for the Data Center Business Unit at Western Digital, which means I have a responsibility, my team and I, responsible for the both the HDD, the traditional hard disk, as well as all of the flash devices and NAND components that we sell into the global data center space worldwide, from the cloud scale through the system OEMs into the channel worldwide.
Superb. Fantastic. Right. So let's wind back a second to where we just got to a few seconds ago, and what I was describing as the topic for today. Now, probably the best thing to do is if you just spend 30 seconds, Phil, setting the scene about what you've seen in terms of data growth, because it's that data growth that is going to be relevant to the discussion we get into when we talk about the technology. What have you been seeing over the last sort of, 4 or 5 years, other than, I guess, the obvious massive increase in demand for data?
Yeah, it's the global environment that's creating both the opportunity as well as the challenge, around data growth. We see that really in a very short period of time, data has transformed from just a byproduct of our digital lives to the very engine of the global economy. And it just continues to grow at this dramatic exponential rate. We're innovating in a number of areas to try to keep pace with that. The challenge, of course, is that, storage is fundamental to creating value from data. And that the challenge, of course, is how to efficiently scale and build cost-effective infrastructure to keep pace with that data growth. We're looking at, in our markets, if you think about, for instance, capacity enterprise hard drives, that's been on a very steady 35% capacity annual growth rate year over year. Now, some years are higher, some years are a little bit lower, but that 35% annual growth rate of storage capacity on these capacity enterprise drives, we just see continuing going forward. Very, very strong trend. And similarly, there's been a tremendous growth in enterprise flash as well. That CAGR is also in the 30s, probably more in the high 30s over the next 5 years. And there's new things coming like the edge. Edge architectures, generally speaking, the edge is growing even faster. We think on a capacity basis, maybe as much as 58 to 60% annual growth rate in the edge. And by 2025, probably 2/3 of that capacity will be flash storage in some way, just because of the data locality, data latency sensitive applications that drive that. So the challenge is, how do you efficiently build infrastructure to keep pace with that data growth? Because that data is essentially your global engine. It defines, not just whether a company is going to be successful or not, but in many ways, whether the company even exists in the future depends on how they're capturing, gaining insight from, monetizing that data.
And you highlighted something very interesting there, and that's that continuous growth that we see in the media. And both yourselves and other vendors in this market have done an incredible job at managing to scale the technology to the extent that everybody thinks that hard drives are going to get replaced by SSDs. Clearly, they're not in this market. There's going to be a room for them forever. And the actual cost profile of hard drives and SSDs seems to just decline continuously, so that, we know they're going to be around forever. But of course, they represent a significant challenge because you keep increasing the density of those devices, but you don't necessarily increase the ability to get that data on and off those devices.
Yeah, that's a fundamental aspect of especially the hard drive space. But if you think about both HDD and SSD, different technologies, but both accelerating and, you know, we're innovating in both areas around increasing the density of those bits. You know, hard drives went through, you know, platter expansion from 4 to 5 to 6 to 7 to 8. Now we're in 9 platter products. Helium showed up on the scene in HDD, you know, which significantly improves the ability to drive aerial density in a drive because of the atmosphere inside the drive. Now we're in the energy assist recording, I would say, era of hard drive. We've gotten to the point where now we have to apply energy to that head media interface to continue to improve aerial density. In SSDs and NAND technology, of course, we've gone from SLC to MLC, and now we're bringing QLC products to market. So that relentless, virtuous cycle of engineering and innovation that drives improving bit density allows the industry to store more data. And that in turn drives, again, that cycle of engineering and innovation to improve that. The challenge we face, of course, is that it's getting harder. It's getting more and more difficult to continue to increase at the same rate and pace the density of both HDD media as well as, you know, the transistor-based storage and flash.
Yeah. So, Martin, just bringing you into this, that increase in density, if you look back, I remember doing something about 10 years ago where I did a presentation for somebody, and I did a mapping, and I looked at all the current drive types at the time, and I plotted the density against the interface and the throughput and so on. And at the time, I was thinking, oh, God, this is incredible. We know we're seeing a real decline. But it's not got any better. In fact, it's got significantly worse. And for you and your business, it's a real challenge to be able to get that data on and off of those types of media.
Yeah, well, the real challenge is we talk about aerial density, so for bits, but actually getting data on and off those devices now, because certainly mechanical drives, they're not getting any faster. We're not being able to put more data on them any quicker. That was always the thing. We've discussed this for a long time. It's like there was this dream of you're going to convert all your enterprise arrays for SATA, and they were going to be multi-petabytes. Then somebody pointed out the fact that you just won't be able to get the data on and off fast enough. So you need lots of different techniques. You need to parallelize how you access the data, what you do. Because if you look at your home PC and you've got a hard disk in there, you've got a single spindle. That spindle is spun at the same speed for the past 10, 15 years now.
Yeah, and those higher-end performance drives are going away in replacement to SSD. So actually the ones that are left are the 7.2, the 5.4, the lower-speed drives. So,
yeah.
So, Phil, we've got a bit of a conflict here in the sense that we've got continuous increase in media, a challenge in terms of getting that data on and off the technology, and just generally other issues that revolve around making sure we can make sure this technology is efficient and used efficiently and resilient. And zone media, as I've called it, I mean, there are two technologies here that we need to discuss. But zoned media has become something that's emerged as a technology to actually solve some of these problems, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. Yeah. Before I talk about zone storage, just on your point, that's certainly the case where it's what we call I/O density. You know, the performance of getting data on and off a hard disk drive hasn't evolved nearly as fast or as much as what the capability of those devices are. You know, I think as we go forward, that very traditional storage tier pyramid where the top tier is DRAM, there's a tier of SSD, there's a tier of HDD, and then there's a tier of tape. I think that nicely organized four-tier pyramid is starting to evolve into more tiers as innovation comes to various segments of that tiered structure, whether it's an SSD between, you know, higher performance SSDs or what we would call colder technology. And the similar thing in hard drives as well, higher performing hard drives, as well as hard drives that are built more for colder workloads. So I think going forward, we're going to see more stratification of that pyramid going forward. And we can talk about that later if we want to. Now, your point about zone storage, let me kind of set the context here a little bit. Zone storage is this notion of taking the device, which has a fixed amount of capacity, and dividing it into a number of fixed zones, each zone having a very defined fixed capacity point. But the key is those zones are written sequentially. And we'll get into the details of the strengths of that, as well as, you know, some of the challenge it presents to the application and file system ecosystem around it. But really, for the first time, we're taking steps to improve the storage efficiency, and not just the how much capacity can I store in a device, but efficiency in terms of predictable performance and the endurance of the product and a number of different aspects that are really important from a total cost of ownership. We're taking the first steps in zone storage to actually materially affect this without just adding more bits to the device, without having to, you know, just always innovate more density into the media itself. It's an important inflection point.
Okay. And part of that is to do with, of course, what we just discussed, Martin and I just discussed a second ago there, is that inevitably you've got to somehow be able to manage the data that's on that device in a secure and a safe format. And as an example, if you are continually writing drives that are many, many terabytes in size, recovering from that is, you know, rebuilding from that is incredibly hard. I don't know what the current rebuild times are, Martin, but, you know, we've talked in days, haven't we? In the last time we talked about it.
Yeah, definitely it's in days. But if you're talking about the 10, 12, 14, 16 terabyte drives in a large array, yeah, it can take you a day to rebuild that and to be fully recovered from it. That's why you need different methods of data protection. I mean, RAID 6 isn't really sufficient these days. This is why we're moving more and more to erasure encoding. But erasure encoding comes with its own challenges. Microarray systems, which we've seen more and more. So, and I'm interested to hear how zoned storage is going to help us with some of this as well. I think it's important.
Yeah, I agree. These large capacity devices come with what we would call a large blast radius. Yeah. And it really takes very modern contemporary software stacks to contend with and properly manage 16, 18, 20, and, you know, soon 24 terabyte devices. And it definitely requires an erasure coding approach where you're not trying to exactly replace a failed drive, but just the amount of redundant parity information that was on that drive. So it's a faster process, but still takes quite a while.
Okay, let's start with SMR then in terms of hard drives, because we're still talking about it with hard drives. Is that a good place to start? And we'll maybe talk about what that technology is and how that, you know, that works.
It is a good spot. So SMR has been, has been something that we've had in the industry for a while. Certainly Western Digital has been a pioneering innovator in this. It's today SMR is a hard disk drive construct. If you think about a hard disk drive, the way it's actually created, each platter is this kind of sea of magnetic grains that has really no structure to it at all. And so, you know, for what, 30, 40 years, the construct has been 512 byte sectors or now 4KN. But these are all, you know, kind of constructs of convenience just to create some structure out of those magnetic grains. The reality in a hard drive is, as the technology has continued to advance, the dynamics between how hard it is to flip a magnetic grain and how readily does it stay in that state, and how you can isolate that grain from those around it for the bits you want to write here and not here. The dynamics have got to the point where the read head to read those grains can be much smaller than the write head. And so the dynamic with SMR and the concept here is you're overlapping write tracks, taking advantage of the fact that you can read just a small piece of that non-overlapped data bit to get the accurate value. And it improves the areal density of the device itself. So the value proposition of SMR is you can effectively get a lot more capacity out of a hard disk drive using essentially the same bill of material.
Okay, so effectively what you're doing is, and I guess it's always a challenge on a podcast to visualize this, but let's just try and imagine stones on a beach, imagine your gravel driveway or anything like that, where you've got a random association of objects of similar size, as you describe them, grains of rice, I suppose you could look at on a table or something. And effectively what you're trying to do is somehow you're trying to decide that those grains that are next to each other in some sort of cylindrical shape somehow represent a bit path that you're reading from. And the smaller you make them, they could all be in different angles, or they could be scattered randomly. The more difficult it is for you to basically determine when you read and write that represents one particular bit, because it's always drawn like this. People might think that you have lovely lined up sort of like little soldiers, or, you know, like in columns, little bits of data all neatly lined up in a row. But of course, it doesn't look anything like that. It's a scattering of individual pieces of... I guess, magnetic material. So the challenge is, as you get smaller, those pieces become larger on average, rather than you having a large number to be able to build one particular bit on. And that's the challenge you've got. You're trying to work with the media you've got. It's difficult.
Yeah. as you want to put more capacity in a hard drive, those grains get smaller and smaller. And of course, it takes multiple grains to make up a single bit, a single state, whether it's a zero or a one. But the number of grains is getting pretty small, smaller and smaller. And the challenge is precisely writing the exact bit in the exact location you want it to be in the circular cylinder. Energy assist in our latest technology is really about reducing the jitter in that write signal so that the placement of those bits gets very consistent, very regular, and we can put them very close together. But SMR simply takes advantage of the fact that the write head is larger than the read head. We overlap the write tracks, leaving just a little bit, like the shingles on your roof, leaving just a little bit of the shingle exposed. And that's what the read head focuses on in terms of interpreting what the data actually is.
So in the UK, you should have called the technology tiled magnetic recording, because we have tiles in our roof and not shingles.
Yeah.
So I was thinking when I hear that, you know, must remember to translate. Go ahead, Phil.
Well, no, you can see the challenge that it gets into then. You know, if you want to take advantage of the increased density of the bits and all of the, you know, the TCO advantages that come with that, you have to think about how you're laying down the data on the drive. If you're laying down overlapping tracks, shingled tracks, you can't just go back and change one bit because it's buried underneath other write tracks. And so the notion of zone storage as applied to hard disk drives is the technology we call SMR. And of course, it's now been standardized in both the SCSI and the serial ATA working groups. It's a technology, again, that's been out for several years. The customers are adapting their software stacks to work with the notion of writing data sequentially in fixed capacity zones, and then treating those zones as kind of a single homogeneous life cycle of data. So the key to zone storage in general is applying it to workloads that are sequentially written in nature, and where the data, as it's written in each zone, has a similar life cycle. So in other words, you'd be writing it as a block of data. You can read individual, you can random read, of course, and the performance is the same. So in that respect, it behaves just like a normal disk drive would. But if you delete the data, you'd need to delete the zone. And so the data really needs to have a pretty similar life cycle for it to be efficiently stored on the device.
Martin, I remember when I looked at this, first of all, the first thing that leapt out at me was, wasn't this the challenge we had with flash drives, in the sense that we have to erase a flash block or a page or whatever the size is in order to rewrite it? But we can read quite happily, but writing becomes a bit more of a challenge. And it seems like that SMR is introducing that similar concept.
Yeah, but we know that reading is always easy, writing is always hard.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. So if you're using this device, Phil, clearly you're writing in blocks, or areas, let's call them zones, we should call them, not blocks. So you're writing in zones, you're expecting that the zone will be written sequentially, and you're expecting zones to be written for a particular purpose. So when we say zone, are we talking about something that's as small as a few megabytes, or are we talking something that's the size of a few gigabytes, or is that completely dynamic?
No, it could be, it's, you know, tens to maybe hundreds of megabytes in size. That's something that customers have the opportunity to tune a bit based on their application environment. It's not a rigid environment, although we're building a drive for a specific application, a specific construct of that. But, you know, again, we're dealing with magnetic grains and organizing them. And so really the firmware has the capability of adapting to the size of the zone that makes sense. And we'll see that as we talk about the SSD size as well, depending on what application, OS, file system environment that you're adapting either SMR hard drives or ZNS SSDs to, you can vary the size of the zones.
We'll come back and we'll talk about the OS side and the management side in a minute, because I think that in itself is a fantastically interesting area. But let's talk about ZNS, as we would call it over here, ZNS, as you will be calling it, but zoned namespaces or zoned namespaces?
ZNS. So in general, we talk about zone storage as the collection of HDD and SSDs that implement block or the zone-based storage paradigms. The HDD is SMR technology, and the SSD uses ZNS or zone namespace. The advent of ZNS in SSDs really came out of a similar objective, which is improving the storage efficiency as SMR did, but it does it in kind of a different way. It looks at it from a different perspective. Of course, you're dealing with hard disk drive technology, which is fundamentally magnetic recording in grains, whereas SSD, you're storing data in transistors. Whereas in an HDD, the structure of the grains is somewhat, you know, it's just, you know, amorphous. In an SSD, structure really matters. When you build a hard disk, a solid-state disk that's emulating the operation of a hard disk drive out of transistors, you're dealing with the structure of the NAND, the dies themselves, how they're organized in terms of multiple dies inside of an SSD, the controller, particular controller you're using, and that leads to structures inside the SSD that, you know, define what your block erase, kind of your minimum size array structure looks like. Now, your read pages can be small, but your blocks from an erase point of view are tend to be quite a bit larger than that. And so part of the challenge that SSDs face is they were really born in an environment where they were trying to emulate a hard disk drive. And as I said, hard disk drives have used for 3 or 4 decades this notion of 512-byte sectors, 4K sectors. For an SSD to emulate kind of that random read-write characteristic of a disk drive, it has to go to great lengths to manage the transistors themselves, whether it's the integration of DRAM to manage all the data pointers and the gymnastics associated with, you know, reading small pieces of data, block erasing a large chunk, and then writing the data back that you wanted to preserve. All of that reading and writing creates amplification of the writes, which reduces the endurance of the drive. So you have to over-provision the amount of NAND inside of a SSD to account for the fact that you need more working capacity than the actual effective capacity of the device. And so this idea of ZNS really was, how can we use the concept of zone storage to match the size of the zone to the physical structure of the SSD itself to create a much more efficient storage capability?
Okay, that was a long, pretty good detailed description of that. Let me sort of make an obvious statement from my perspective. When I first saw this, I thought, okay, what you're doing is you're dividing a physical piece of media up into smaller chunks, either possibly because you want to make it more efficient to be able to write in parallel, especially with NVMe, or what you're doing is you're saying we have certain types of data that are read-only and other types of data that might write more frequently and of different block sizes. And by having zones that are almost like emulating that type of data requirement, you can minimize the overhead or the endurance or the wear on the media by being more efficient with how you read and write that data in a zone. Is that a misunderstanding of the way the technology is designed?
Maybe a bit yes and no. In the ZNS standard, you can take an SSD and divide it up into, of course, you know, physically distinct zones of fixed capacity. You can also sort of create a connection between a given zone and a given application. And so you can create a little bit of a multi-tenant environment where you've got a defined relationship between a zone and an application, for instance, so that you can kind of eliminate some of the noisy neighbor or some of the dynamics associated with maybe what might be a very inefficient application from a read-write perspective with one that may be very predictable from a sequential write point of view. So that's an advantage. What you were talking about, though, is even a little more fundamentally, when you create a zone on an SSD, and that zone essentially is matching the block erase structure of the SSD itself, so you're treating it as a sequentially written block of data that if you're going to erase any part of it, you erase the whole thing. And the application and the operating system, the file system, understand that notion that if I'm going to delete any of this data, I'm deleting the whole block. You're immediately giving the SSD a much simpler task to operate in. It doesn't have to worry about preserving some of that data and writing it in other places in the SSD and then trying to keep track of where all those little chunks of data go. It's a very simple process of tracking how the data is sequentially written and where it's organized and where every byte of data is on the SSD. It also eliminates that notion of write amplification, that idea where every read-write operation requires a certain degree of additional writes of data to other parts of the SSD to account for that mismatch between the read page and the erase block. It also then improves the endurance of the SSD because you're not subjecting it to unnecessary write activity. And of course, it reduces the amount of DRAM required in an SSD. So there is a match between a zone and application, but even more fundamentally, ZNS gets right to the heart of the structure of a workload and the physical structure of an SSD and how to match those two up.
Okay. So I'm going to come at it from a different angle this time. Okay. Yeah. Could we look at it and say that effectively what you've done is you'd rather than say on a traditional device where you have no idea of what the I/O is, that the I/O is just coming in and it could be random, it could be sequential, it could be a mix of the two at any one particular time, especially on SSDs where you're less concerned about throughput because you know they're performing devices. What you're almost doing is pushing up some of the awareness of the application requirements to the maybe the OS or something like that, so that the drive itself has a simplified piece of work to do in that it only has to deal with rewriting blocks of a fixed size or reading blocks of a fixed size. And almost the operating system now sits at a layer above and says, I'll manage the I/O from that level and I'll let the device do less work. So now the device is a bit more able to deliver things in a better way for its media type.
Yes, exactly. You hit the nail on the head, Chris. That easier operating environment for an SSD translates into a number of things. One is more predictable performance. You know, SSDs can be a bit unpredictable in their quality of service because in the background, they're always doing some form of garbage collection, cleaning up blocks that have been erased where data has been read and then written to other parts of the device. And then that background activity can at times get in the way of the performance profile of the SSD in real world applications. So by giving the SSD a much cleaner tasks to do and much less garbage collection, lower write amplification, et cetera, you're actually significantly improving the predictable performance of the device. And that's meaningful. And of course, you're also eliminating what we would call over-provisioning, this notion of putting more NAND capacity in an SSD than what it's actually rated of delivering. And this can be 15, 20. There's even some examples in the enterprise space of 25% over-provisioning. You're essentially reclaiming that NAND and making it available to applications for storage instead of just as extra bits because you need the scratch space to work with.
Martin, I think this is an interesting sort of evolution of the way that we deal with media, that when we had that discussion about dual actuator with another similar vendor of in this market, we heard a lot there about how the operating system, or at least the next level up in that stack, is having to do a bit more work here to help the device understand what to do with that data. And it sounds like what Phil's describing to us is pretty much a similar scenario where the operating system is trying to take some of that overhead out and basically help the media a bit more efficiently.
Yeah, so obviously the intelligence goes up the stack and the operating system itself and how it interacts with storage. I mean, that's going to bring some interesting challenges as well, because you're dealing with data, and data is the important thing. And considering the way some operating systems have been written in the past, I'm not sure I entirely trust them.
No, it's true.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that, you know, that side of it then, Phil. So I know there are different modes of operation, for example, for SMR. You can use a drive just as if it was a normal drive. You could plug and play, just replace. But obviously you can have host-aware connectivity for that drive. So how do those different modes work?
Yeah, so in a hard disk drive, when we talk about an SMR drive, you can have a drive managed SMR, which is where the drive is managing all the dynamics associated with sequentially written data and managing zones and not being able to handle random writes of data that might be in the middle of a shingled zone. It's a very complex task. And so the drive managed SMRs, those drives work in a lot of workloads, but certainly they get taxed and they're not a general purpose solution for everything. Then on the other end of the spectrum, you've got host managed SMR, which is when we talk about zone storage, that's what I'm talking about, a fully host managed SMR environment where the host OS file system, the application stack, is fully aware of the SMR command set and understands the idea of the data has to be written sequentially in zones and deleted as a zone. There's host aware, which is a bit of a hybrid. It's a mode of operation where the host has sort of it can operate as a drive managed or a host managed environment. That's not what zone storage is about. So it's a fully host managed application.
So we expect to see the benefits if you properly fully manage the drive rather than try and come up with some halfway sort of solution. It seems to me you're saying it's much better just to accept that the real benefits will be achieved by fully managing the drive yourself.
Now, when we talk about SMR hard drives, there certainly is the capability where a small portion of the capacity of the hard drive could be non-zoned, could be non-SMR. How we find the right balance point, again, depends on the environment that the drive goes into. But there's certainly some advantages to a drive that actually has a little bit of, I would say, true random read-write access capacity. And then the balance of it is of course, SMR. Think about a drive that maybe starts out with some hot data on it, and that data quickly becomes cold over time. You could think about an environment, a rack of storage or a fleet of storage or thousands of racks of storage where the data may initially land on the drive in a CMR or a conventional format, and then get quickly tiered into SMR zones as it gets cold and it's unlikely to change. And it's a sequential access at that point. So whereas on the SSD side, you're really physically building an SSD for a ZNS application because you can so significantly reduce the amount of DRAM and over-provisioning required, maybe as much as an 8x reduction in DRAM in an SSD as possible. And if you think about the bill of material for an SSD, after the NAND, the second most costly element in an SSD is DRAM. And so if you can significantly reduce the DRAM, you can obviously deliver a much stronger value proposition for the device.
So does that mean we're going to see a whole range of devices that are built purely for large-scale enterprise customers that are not like the consumer device, that are 100% built to need that level of management, but at the same time are significantly much more cost-effective because you're able to reduce that bill of materials?
Well, if you think about the global growth of data, clearly, you know, we have a very interesting view of the market given our deep reach into the OEM space, the storage system space, the traditional on-prem enterprise, and then of course the cloud vendors, whether it's, you know, CSPs of various sizes all the way up to the largest hyperscalers. As you know, the decisions made as to where a data center gets built is about data locality, but what a data center looks like is all about TCO, especially at scale. Now, you know, it's hard to get your head wrapped around the size and scale of some of the world's largest hyperscalers, but when they're dealing with literally tens of thousands of racks, hundreds of thousands of racks, if you can drive a 10 to 20% capacity uplift in a drive, essentially in the same bill of material, that's enormous at scale. And so you can see the powerful motivation that a technology like SMR is in the largest consumers of that capacity, where they deal routinely with exabytes and even zettabytes of data. So now SMR SSDs, we're seeing some very unique and I would say a little more varied deployment of those in both the large cloud space, because clearly efficiency and everything I talked about in terms of the value proposition of a ZNS SSD, it certainly applies, and even more so in large environments. But even in traditional, I would say, 20-year-old storage stacks, the notion of collaboration between the stack and the SSD itself can create significant efficiencies. And certainly that the performance angle that I talked about, a very predictable performance, the notion of data on an SSD becoming a bit colder. As I mentioned at the start of the talk, that pyramid of storage tiers is stratifying into more tiers. And in general, hot data tends to get hotter over time, cold data gets colder. And so the opportunity to create more purpose-built devices that meet and have a sustainable value proposition in one of those tiers as a little bit colder device in both SSD and HDD is certainly emerging.
Martin, I just wanted to talk to you about, you know, what we typically see in the enterprise. You know, you look at it, the way that vendors are selling us appliances today, and they'll ship an appliance, and we'll see the introduction of, say, NVMe or flash technology, for sake of argument. And at the object storage level, we've seen the ability to do scale out and all mm-hmm. that sort of stuff. I just wonder whether we're going to see a bit of a benefit here for software defined, simply because if you're building your own scale out environment on using software, you perhaps can add features into that software fairly quickly that take advantage of that new technology without having to rebuild an entire solution. And I wonder whether we might see some SDS vendors being more creative with the use of this sort of media in the first instance.
I think that's where we should see it. That's where I would hope to see it. I mean, we talk about applications managing storage, and I think there'll be some people listening to this, you mean our enterprise developers are going to have to understand but how their storage is going to work, whether their workload is sequential or tag data streams as they come in. Okay, treat this as mostly sequential. You know what, this goes here. This is a random stream, so you want to put it there. I think initially we're going to have to see this at the SDS tier where the intelligence is built in at that level, not by the developer generally sitting at the desktop at the moment.
No, but it makes you wonder whether what we end up with, which I totally agree with that, by the way, but I just wonder whether we end up with software that almost has to have some level of communication with the application and say, you're sending me sequential data, so I know I'm going to stick it on that tier there. And then from an SDS level, you're looking at it and saying, well, it's growing into a few terabytes, maybe petabytes. Now if I shove in that next thinner layer of cheaper media, I can archive some of that down, and then I can push that up to the side, and then I can add more in. So now I end up spending a lot more time trying to manage multiple tiers because I know I can see the cost economy of doing that. But it needs the software to do that transparently to the application without you having to be very intelligent about modifying your applications to do that.
Well, transparency, certainly for legacy applications, for instance, is going to be absolutely key. This isn't going to go anywhere. We've seen things that fall to pieces because of this, because the legacy heritage applications. And then we're going to have some very interesting things as we move further on into different ways of developing things. Function as a service, does a function as a service have to know about the data it's writing? So persistent tiers are going to get more and more interesting. They've always been interesting to me and you, Chris. But that persistence... And the definition of persistence means obviously it hangs around for a long time, but you've got hot and cold data, understanding that. I mean, Phil mentioned something within hard drives. Like we're tiering within a hard drive. That's quite a scary thought.
Oh, creates opportunity. You guys are on the right topic here. And, you know, beyond just whether the software stack is software defined or not, I mean, I think that word maybe is a bit overdone, but you really have to look at the workload and where most of the data growth in the data sphere of the world is actually in very at scale workloads that are very naturally serialized or written in larger chunks. You think about online backup, archive, video surveillance, IoT, other kinds of machine generated data. Now, machine generated data is larger than human generated data. Data for regulatory compliance. I mean, I could go on and on, but a lot of the workloads that are really driving a lot of the significant capacity expansion in the world, whether it's on SSD or HDD, are actually fundamentally serial in nature. And so for those kinds of workloads, a software-defined stack that is kind of working on that workload, you can create a very direct connection between the software stack and the zone storage device itself. Now, for software-defined stacks or any stack that finds itself more in a general workload environment where you might have a mix of random read-write and some sequential, and it's hard to predict what workload, there you're going to be relying more on the zone block device buffer layers in the Linux kernel that kind of create a bit of a translation layer between the rigid requirements of a zone storage device requiring sequentially written and erased data versus an application that might have to deal with a much more general purpose workload.
I was going to say, I think it's interesting you talk about workloads in general, actually. I don't think very many people realize that most data workloads, you write it, you read it, you delete it. Very rarely do you change it. Most workloads are not that volatile, but certainly, and when you start talking about machine data, machine generated data, you've got data streams coming in from IoT devices, well, you're never going to change it. You're only either going to write it, then you're going to read it, and then you might move it, or you'll probably delete it. But the actual amend doesn't really happen.
Right, right, exactly.
Okay, I was just going to point out, and maybe this is a second topic, Phil, for another day, because we could probably spend an hour talking about this, but you just highlighted something I think it is worth just touching on again, and that's within, say, operating systems like Linux, there are actually new drivers that have been designed that effectively do that translation layer on behalf of the the operating system, where if you've got a file system, for example, that can talk to, say, a block device, or at least a pseudo block device that goes through a device driver that knows how to talk to the SMR drive efficiently and to make sure it either buffers or stacks that up and handles that data. So that in itself is possibly a discussion for another day, but I think that all of that support's already in there, isn't it? It's been there for a while.
No, it is. It is. Yeah. Support for zone storage devices that was added to the Linux kernel, I think with the release of version 4.1.0. And now it enables support for zone storage at various different levels, whether it's at the disk driver level, the file system level, the device mapper drivers. If you think about how to sort of develop for zone storage, it depends on kind of one's system structure and one's ability to modify the application layer and the operating system kernel that you're using. Now, if you're a hyperscale environment, you totally control that environment, every line of code effectively, and you can create a very intelligent, a very collaborative direct path between the application stack and the zone storage devices. Whereas if you don't own and you don't control that operating system layer, then you're going to rely more on what's being implemented and what has been implemented in, let's say, in the Linux kernel.
And I guess that also could apply that if you've got a storage device vendor, an appliance vendor, they're going to have to put the work in there themselves to make these devices consumable. It's going to be part of their responsibility.
Yeah, part of their responsibility. And that work is underway, you know, everywhere. I mean, SMR, of course, has been out for a while, and we expect that over the course of the next generation of hard disk drives, as much as half of the capacity shipped is going to be SMR. So this, we're really on the leading edge of something that will be a very significant deployment architecture in the industry going forward. We're very excited about the momentum with ZNS on the SSD side. It was just approved this summer as a standard in the NVMe working group. And that has really galvanized the accelerated development of the software ecosystem around it. We see, you know, more of that kind of that direct connection between an application, let's say a RocksDB environment, to a zone storage or a ZNS SSD. Those constructs are either in place or being developed. And we have active, you know, commercial projects underway with both hyperscalers as well as storage system OEMs, things that you would say that's a 30-year-old software stack that's being adapted to a ZNS SSD because of all of those value propositions that come with it: endurance, performance, cost efficiency. The other thing I haven't mentioned yet is QLC. QLC NAND is important. You know, the world is moving from SLC to MLC, from TLC now, QLC. The challenge of making QLC work in the enterprise is its endurance. If you want a very high endurant SSD, building it with QLC requires a lot of over-provisioning of that NAND. Whereas if it's a ZNS QLC, you effectively are getting all that capacity advantage of the QLC bits without having to over-provision it. So we see ZNS really as the key enabler to using QLC in enterprise applications.
That is something perhaps we should come to call and say that's a great point to pause at, because this has been a wonderful introduction. And I think perhaps maybe I'm going to create a bit of a spoiler here, and not a spoiler, but a teaser perhaps for the future. And that's that whole idea of QLC and maybe PLC, because it sounds to me like if we do genuinely get PLC come along as the next generation, ZNS is going to have to be one of those technologies that's in there from day one in order to make it work. So
yes,
it now suddenly thinking about it, if that is available, PLC could be a lot more viable than perhaps we were really talking about in the first place, which is interesting, I think, as a concept. I think that's been a fantastic starting point, Phil, for everybody to get stuck into understanding this. I have a massive series of links that I was given from your people, so I'll put those in the show notes to save you having to read them out or you know, go through them. But in general, is there any way you'd just like to point people to go and have a look at this?
Yeah, Western Digital sponsors a website in the industry called zonestorage.io. This is not your typical, you know, marketing website. It's an actual aggregation point for open source content, for ways of validating ZNS devices or zone storage devices. It's an open source code repository for things that can accelerate companies' adoption of the technology. It's really more of a technical website, but I would encourage anyone that wants some more information out there to go there, zonestorage.io.
Okay, brilliant. And I'll make sure I put that link into our show notes too. But for now, Phil, thank you very much indeed for joining us. It's been a really, really interesting discussion. And, you know, we could go on for a long time, but I don't want to, you know, overwhelm everybody with a wealth of information. So we'll follow up and we'll do something else where we go again over this and talk about, you know, some of the technologies as it evolves. But for now, thank you very much for joining us and look forward to catching up with you soon.
Yeah, my pleasure, Chris and Martin. It's been great. Thank you.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.